What's up, everybody?
Well, hello.
How do you like our little left and right thing we got going on?
It's new.
We'll see if we like it. We'll see if you like it.
What we did is we got a new mixer, because if you listened to last week's show, you heard it fits out a couple times. It's been fitting out before, so we decided to put some of the craft beer funds into getting a mixer to make the sound better. And while we did it, we decided, well, we'll try doing a stereo release, see if that makes any difference.
Yeah, the old mixer, we couldn't pan the mic inputs like this left and right a little bit. And you'll notice where I'm in your right ear.
Left ear. You're in my left.
My headphones are on backwards. Yes, they are. I was wearing my headphones backwards. Now I'm in the left ear.
All right.
And Greg's a little bit to the right. Ultra-conservative Greg.
Yes.
All right. So for the pre-show, we're cleaning up the fridge. Heather's sick of the Sam Adams Christmas pack. So the chocolate bock I was saving for her, I don't think she's going to drink. So I'm going to drink it. We are going to drink it.
Just Jeff's going to drink this to you.
Together. All of us are going to drink it. So I finished up my all my modifications to my electric brewery earlier today. I'm going to try to brew tomorrow if my schedule permits.
Which one?
Whip beer, probably. I don't know. It's hard to say. I might do the bitter brewer clone. I'm kind of in the mood for something a little hoppy. So
a little bit of gook on the outside of my glass.
Yeah, so the other big change with the mixer, I guess, is that we used to have an external compressor limiter. And that would keep the sound down when we got too excited and too loud. We'd keep it from, you know, clipping and getting all gzzz. And this has one built in, but it only has one knob instead of, you know, four knobs.
Right.
So, like, we can't control attack and release, but, you know, that's probably not too important for vocal. You know, it's probably a lot. I could see where it's a lot more important for percussion and things like that. Attack is, you have to be over the threshold for so many milliseconds before the compressor kicks in. And then releases, once you go back under the threshold, it keeps compressing until that release milliseconds is up. And that helps you fine-tune it, because otherwise you could find your compressors pumping, where it's turning on, turning off, turning on, turning off, and you get this like pumping-type sound out of it.
Yeah, we're not a dubstep show.
Not exactly that, but, you know, you could see where with instruments and things like that and be a lot more important. Mm-hmm. We're a lot more mundane with our voices.
So, how about them fucking meteors?
How about them fucking meteors? Sky is falling. You see the one about in the Bay Area last night?
Yeah, there is probably a small one, probably about the size of a chihuahua or something.
I don't know. I was thinking like marbled a golf ball, but it was a fireball.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen a fireball like that before too. Yeah. So it was nothing too unusual. But, you know, just the timing.
The reason why I said about, you know, maybe a Bay Bread box is because Jeff is showing me his switch comb. Because it gets, it got apparently very, very bright. Now, I mean, I've seen ones that, you know, linger for a while, but usually mm-hmm. those are like the golf ball ones, the marble okay. ones. But if it got really, really bright, it probably had it a little bit of time. So, maybe gotcha. A bread box.
So, no, the big meteor, though, that thing, it's pretty crazy. 55 feet across?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
10,000 tons. Is that what they said? 10,000 tons.
I think it was up to 70,000 tons.
Okay,
because I think it was probably nickel and stuff inside. It was pretty massive. Not even still a very small cousin of the Tunguska event, but within the ballpark.
What was the yield of Tunguska? So this one was 500 kilotons, half a megaton. Do you remember what the yield for
Tunguska? The yield of Tunguska was a couple hundred megatons, I'm pretty sure. It was stronger than any nuclear weapon.
It flattened like hundreds of acres of
about 100 acres square, yeah, or 1,000 acres square. I mean, 1,000 square acres as far as it was huge. Mm-hmm. So Tunguska was probably the size of a large house.
And now,
like
am I
this was probably the size of a small, I don't know, swimming pool?
55 feet is pretty big.
Yeah, oh, big for a swimming pool.
And yeah, I mean, you're talking about 70,000 tons. So, I mean, this was the size of a house or more. I mean, this was big. Tunguska was probably a comet, you know, so it was probably even bigger because it wasn't as dense.
Right.
You know, they think Tunguska was a comet because they really didn't find anything. So they think it all melted. Tunguska, if you're not familiar, is another thing that happened over Russia in 1908. Mm-hmm. And it happened in the middle of nowhere. Like, there was only a few humans that reported seeing it type thing. Mostly a bunch of moose died.
Trees. Bunch of trees.
Yeah.
Birds.
Yep. And, yeah, so this will be your one big meteor for this century. So,
you know,
live it up.
The funny thing is that it happened just as another asteroid was coming and, you know, people were making a big deal, and I was going to watch the close approach of that asteroid because people, you know, they're uh-huh. doing it.
It was exciting until the real shit happened.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, oh, this is going to be cool. And then when that thing happened and you saw these videos, I mean, one of the wonderful things about living in today's world is that videos of that kind of thing were instantly everywhere.
It boggles the mind how many videos there are of a 4-second event.
Yeah.
You know, like, how in the world? But most of them are the Russian dashboard cams, mm-hmm. and I read a story just about the dashboard cams. Basically, the way insurance is around there, you got to cover your ass, you got to prove who did what, you have to have these cameras rolling all the time. So that's why there's so many dashboard cams in Russian cars.
And there's a supercut of dashboard cam, like, things, people getting into crashes and okay. other stuff. So I watched that. It was horrifying and entertaining and all the things.
The, you know, the shots of the meteor from the dashboard cams is fascinating, but the scary ones are the shockwave ones.
Yeah.
Videos. I mean, imagine you see this big meteor happen, or maybe you miss the meteor because you're inside and you look up and you see these, you know, twin cloud things. It looked almost like, if you just walked out and saw the contrails, yeah. it looked almost like, you know, like the rocket boosters off the space shuttle or something like that. You know, it reminded me a little bit of Challenger, mm-hmm. you know? And you're standing there, and 2.5 minutes later, boom! I mean, super loud explosion.
I mean, you could tell how shockingly loud it was just from the YouTube. And it was surprising just how in the video, because, you know, usually the video, If it were to be that loud, it wouldn't come through, or it just would sound sort of in the distance. No, this was just wham. You felt it while you were watching it, and then you hear all the glass in the vicinity just shatter. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, that was powerful.
Yeah, I saw some security cam footage. Like, there's these two people in, like, a computer, like, working at a small IT shop or something, right? They're sitting there just talking, and the window blows in, and they're like, what the... You know, they scrambled for the other door, you know? Uh-huh. Can you just imagine how you'd react? Like, they didn't.
No, I mean, I would not react rationally, mm-hmm. not in that instant.
You said you had a neat, you know, interesting thing about, imagine having this, you know, happen
during the Middle Ages is my idea. I mean, like, yeah. Jeff said it would be really scary during the Cold War because you think, oh shit, here's the war. And I say, you know, you would be able to wrap your head around something like that, at least. Right. I mean, you're familiar with that kind of loudness and potential for that kind of destruction. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the Middle Ages and something like that happens, what choice do you have but think that's like some sort of all-powerful god or something?
Mm-hmm.
You have no understanding and no way of grasping what the heck that was.
Right.
So the mind would, I think, obviously leap to a supernatural causation conclusion.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. It makes perfect sense. And yeah, that means something that violent. You know, that's definitely God saying, you fucked up, you better not do it again. You know? Yeah, that was just crazy.
I read some people asking, you know, what if this happened in the middle of New York or something like that? And I mean, it would have been pretty incredible if it happened then, but the odds of that are so ridiculously small.
Well, there, you know, I've been reading a bunch of stories and listening to a bunch of science podcasts and things, and, you know, a lot of talk about preventing this. You know, like, you know, doing the surveys, doing, you know, coming up with a way to, like, you know, it's the one guy was saying, you know, it's relatively easy. You could do it with today's technology if you have enough time, right? You just need to alter an asteroid's velocity, you know, by just a few when it's going to cross the Earth's path, you just have to change its speed so it misses by a few seconds.
Yeah.
By a few seconds. So if you, you know, just park a spaceship nearby.
Gravity tractor.
It'll slow it down. You know, you could do other things, you know, shoot an ion engine at it. You know, there's a lot of things you could do, right? And just
my favorite is paint it white.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sun, the influence of the sun will cause it to be pushed.
Right. Or just paint half of it white, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll add pressure to the black side will absorb heat and radiate it, and the white side will just reflect the light, and it'll cause it to veer off course slightly. Even though they made it sound like it'd be more effective to change its velocity instead of change its direction. Yeah, the guy that was talking, foundation that is working on it or whatever. No one asked the question.
Was it RB6 or something?
Something like that. No one asked the question in any of these talks, is it worth the investment?
Well, the thing is, like, this sort of thing, the thing that happened to Russia, there's nothing they could have done about that. Wouldn't have been able to find it. Wouldn't have been able to do anything about it. It's too small.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what they're talking about is for the world killers, you know. Sure.
But the odds of that...
The Chuxel Club event type thing.
Right. I mean, how much is humanity worth, I guess, but you know, like with the odds and everything, I think the fervor is going to die out really quick. And
I mean, it's obviously in the front of people's minds right now because it just happened. But yeah, after a while, people are going to say, "Well, we got other things to worry about." Blah blah blah. The one thing is that it is the one natural disaster that we can absolutely prevent. That's the kind of thinking behind it, is that, well, if there is one thing that we can prevent, we might as well try to do what we can to prevent it.
Can we prevent it? If all the things line up and we get lucky, we can prevent it, but...
Exactly, but there's no amount of luckiness that can line up that can prevent us from being from a volcano going off, or earthquake, or a tsunami... That isn't started by an asteroid.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that statement because, you know, there could be technology to do things to prevent earthquakes and volcanoes.
Not that we know of. We know of no way to do that now.
With
today's technology, we can prevent this sort of thing from a sort of world killer asteroid from hitting.
Sure, if we could just spend the money to find them and then the money to get there and the money to paint it white.
I mean, it takes a lot to get there because you have to get out of the Earth's atmosphere, out of the Earth's gravitational field, and then get up to the delta V of that particular asteroid, which is probably going 30 or 40,000 miles per second in a direction that's not in the direction you launched the thing. So you're going to have a lot of fuel to get up to that speed to get near it. And then, it's a very expensive proposition, but it can be done.
I think they said this one entered the Earth's atmosphere at like 20 miles a second or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't obscene numbers. Like you just said, you know, tens of thousands of miles a second. That one might be a little big, but, you know, this one.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that, so the Earth is going at a certain, at 10,000 miles per second around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And the asteroid is going almost certainly on some different orbit at a different angle. So you have to change your acceleration, your momentum to that. And that is an entire, that's a huge amount of, you know, expense to be able to do that.
Yeah, I know. Yes, I agree. The, I'm really, you know, fascinated to see, you know, what else. I'm surprised they couldn't find anything in the lake. You know, there's a big lake with a hole in it.
Well, who knows if they? It could have shattered on. It could have basically destroyed impact. There were little tiny bits around it that they saw. there may not have been much that impacted in the lake, but it was just the force of the impact that was up. But it shouldn't have been falling that fast at that point.
I mean, it knocked
terminal velocity,
a big hole in the lake, right? And they didn't find any sizable chunks at the bottom of the lake, which was interesting. But just an asteroid. Meteor. It's a meteoroid at that point, right? So
who, meteoroid, yes. Meteoroid.
Isn't it meteorite once it's
meteorite, rocks? Yes. Meteorite, yes. It's a meteoroid while it's going to hit us. It's a meteor. Technically, the light effect is the meteor.
Okay.
It is at that point a meteoroid, and if it hits the ground, then it's a meteorite. Yeah.
Oh, fun stuff.
Fun stuff. Woo-hoo.
There was a reality show about meteors. Meteor hunters.
Oh.
Where they would go, like, in cornfields with metal detectors and dig up the meteors and sell them. I don't think it ran for very many seasons. Made it sound like a fun way to make money, though.
It doesn't sound too exciting, but I mean, there's, what is it, 40,000 tons of stuff that falls onto the Earth every year, so
mm-hmm.
there's going to be some things that find their way down, but big deal.
So, what else? So, the other asteroid that flew by without any incident, didn't smash into any telecommunication satellites or anything. So,
no.
That's good. But space is very big, so they weren't really expecting that.
Yeah, it flew within, I think it was within 20,000 miles of Earth or something like that.
Like 17,000.
Yeah.
And the our geosync satellites are 22,500 miles. So
it dipped under that, but... That was a bigger asteroid.
It's about, they said it was 4 or 5 times bigger than the one that came in.
Yeah.
So I think they said it was like, or 3 times. It was 155 feet across, that one.
So like a 10-story building, something like that. Pretty big. Still wouldn't have been a mass extinction event, but, you know, in the right circumstances could have been a city killer, but,
Mm-hmm. Fun.
So, other fun. My contract is ending, as it turns out.
Okay.
So everyone at work loves me, so they say. But no, I'm still working there for the next 2 weeks. But they're doing a transition in certain ways and changing the way the company works, and so they don't really have enough money to afford expensive contractors anymore. But
at least the atheist contractors.
But they are, you know, I've got like 7 different people giving me recommendations. I've got 6 different things going out to different jobs, and I put my resume on Monster on Thursday, and I got like 9 calls from recruiters yesterday. So it's, I mean, it's looking pretty good. I'll find something pretty quickly, I think.
That's cool. Monster, we find Monster's useless for us anymore. We don't even post our jobs on Monster anymore. We use LinkedIn primarily. And when I was looking for my, you know, help, the people that submitted the resumes to the jobs on Monster, you know, these are people submitting resumes, but they were just blasting out resumes. I'd call to phone screen them. They wouldn't know which job I was calling about, you know, things like that. It was, yeah, so I... Everyone in my company, including me, is like very little faith, or you know, we just don't use Monster.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Monster was more to get my name out to the recruiters.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, but if you're you know, still looking for another avenue, try LinkedIn. Might be something there too.
Okay. Fair enough. I keep note of all the jobs that I have applied to.
Mm-hmm. Get those irons in the fire so you can choose the best job.
Huh? Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, what I want is there to be a bidding war. that's what excites me is that there's, you know, there's lots of possible options.
Greg will be like negotiating extra work from home days or vacation.
We'll see. Yeah, the only, you know, the obviously it sucks to lose a position, but I mean, this is not a position that I'm losing because of anything other than. Well, that's, you know, that's the way it works if you're a contractor sometimes.
Right.
But they wanted to keep me, but they didn't have the money for it. So
could have worked for free.
Yeah, right. So the only thing that sucks about it is that I will lose the 3 days from home. Most likely, I don't think I'll be able to find a situation like that. But the other 2 days, I had an hour and a half commute. So it's right. It balances itself out roughly.
Yeah. Hopefully, this new job's not in West Virginia.
No. They're all kind of run right around the Pittsburgh area. That's so cool.
Very cool.
I still got two more weeks of work. I still got stuff to do. So it's not like.
Mm-hmm.
So irons are in the fire, but we'll see.
Cool. Oh, I just have been busy at work. Nothing to really share. Beer events, it's beer season's coming up, I guess. We got Savor in June.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple weeks later in June is the National Homebrewers Conference in Philly. And I don't think you'd be interested in going,
no.
But I might head out there, maybe take the family and I don't know. Philly's a fun town.
Yeah, no, Philly is a fun town, but I think it's the kind of situation where, especially if as I'm starting a new job,
yeah,
gonna take Savor time, but yeah. Then we want to do Gabbeth, and that's October, so
yep, yeah, we're raising funds for the GABF, and we're making some good headway. We made $50 off of Amazon so far, even though maybe probably more than half of that's Greg, but we've gotten some other things that I know aren't you, so. So that's cool.
And we had a donation, right? We had a significant donation.
Significant donation.
From John. John, thank you very much for your donation. It was very, very...
One of those longtime listeners who's been listening for years and years. And I mean, we, it's interesting. You think, we have Jamie and we have, the listeners that have been around for years that give us feedback. But, there's these other guys that are just as... valued listeners. They listen as regularly, but just like you and me, there's lots of podcasts we don't miss and we've never written to, So that's it's good to know every once in a while one of those comes in and especially thanks us with something so meaningful, so helpful.
Absolutely.
Get us on those airplanes.
What else is going on? How far are we into this one?
37, 38.
So, yeah, keep counting. That'll be helpful. let's see. Community was...
I didn't watch it yet.
Okay. It was a better episode, but it was still missing
the
things that make Community, which is really Dan Harmon. So, that's, It died after 3 seasons. It really were 3 very good seasons. I think that we can happily... you got 3 very, very good seasons out of it. 3 exceptional teams.
So when you have the box sets up on the wall, you're going to have the first 3 and then just an empty spot, right?
Well, no. it was a 3-season show. And then it was killed. And then they put some people in charge of the funeral.
Milking the zombie.
Yeah. It's fine. I understand that's how TV works. But... The show that I loved is gone.
Are you watching? Have you caught up on Joe Schmo?
No. Well, I've just only thing I've caught up on is the descriptions. But from what I understand, they're kind of fussing around with the timelines a little bit with the editing to make it look like different things are happening different times, and they keep messing with him apparently rewriting in his notebook even though it only happened really once, and he was writing about something different. So
so you're saying the second night when they showed him writing in it some more, he wasn't? We talked about this last time, but they're really working the editing angle to say he's almost found out, or he found us out this episode, tune in. And I think they're pushing that angle a little too hard, a little more than I'd like, but I still love the screwing around and just the absurdity.
I watched Burning Love, which is sort of it is more a straightforward parody.
Okay.
But it's got all it's got all the people, from the state and alt comedy scene that we love. And the first one was sort of a Bachelor parody, and this next one that's happening is a Bachelorette parody, and it's very, very funny.
Okay. Burning Love. I'll
Burning
check
Love.
That.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode of House of Cards.
The Netflix show. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've read, and I don't like this type of show anyway, so I doubt I'll be interested, but they said that Shameless does House of Cards way better than House of Cards. So if you're going to watch one of the two, watch that.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to see, you know, the quality of a Netflix show, you know, whatnot. So I watched it. It didn't. As soon as I saw, I didn't know what it was about. As soon as I saw it was a Washington, D.C., Congress, you know, journalist inside the Beltway type thing, I'm like, eh, it better be really good. And it wasn't really good. So I'm like, eh.
$100 million. I got to think that a lot of that money that they say went to the show is really setting up Netflix studio operations. Because from what I understand, it doesn't look like a $100 million show.
I mean, it didn't look...
It didn't look cheap.
No, I mean, it looked like any network show, yeah. Really. And I mean, it's, you know, it looks like it's set in D.C. It might even be set in D.C. or filmed in D.C. I don't know. But, I mean, it looked okay. It just... Yeah, it could be setting up, you know, well, I guess...
I believe it is set in D.C. because my father remarked to me that it was the first time he's seen a scene in a metro station... Because there have been plenty of stuff that, you know, mm-hmm. made scenes of metro that was actually filmed in a metro station.
Oh, okay. So it actually looked like it was these. That's cool. And I guess there's going to be a kids show from, what, Pixar or something like that. They're working with Netflix. Netflix is really working on their studio. It'll be interesting.
The rest of it. I mean, I think that their model is interesting of just releasing all the episodes at once. It fits with their model.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way that they do things for the rest of their site. Why should they change it? Yeah, I think people will take it at their own pace, and that's fine. There is, my sister was sort of wondering about whether that hurts it, and I don't think it hurts it really. I think it's just it's fine to change the paradigm a bit. And okay, so you don't get the same kind of water cooler effect of waiting, you know, for next time. But if you build your show around that, then you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, I think the water cooler effect is dying a rapid death.
Yeah.
The only comment I have about releasing all at once, and this is the same with many podcasts, like if you're catching up on an old podcast, it's sometimes hard to keep track of where you're at or go back and download more. You know, it would almost be nice if they could trickle them into you, you know, like after you've watched one, then the next one comes down and it's in your, you know, new shows type list, you know. Like, when I downloaded The Wire, right, I have, like, 5 seasons of The Wire, and they're all right there.
Uh-huh.
And it would be nice if there was some intelligence there to say, hey, you watched episode 3 of The Wire, here's episode 4, you know, and here's other things, but here's, you know, the next episode, and just show you that stuff. There is a podcasting service. I think it's podiobooks.com. I think, you know, for audio novel type things, where the author puts their books on Podiobooks. But the Podiobooks RSS feed is this dynamic thing where you can say, give me one episode a week. You know, so it trickles it into you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get a customized RSS feed that trickles these episodes in. That's a neat way to do it. And, you know, I would like something like that for when I'm catching up on shows. You know, where you have a couple of seasons of things they catch up on. It'd be nice to have that just trickled in, you know, at a more rapid pace than once a week or something. But, you know, just not flooding you and also not running dry because you download 5 episodes, you watch 5 episodes. You're not quite, you're like, now I got to go download more, but you're not at the computer. You know, it'd be nice to always have that there.
So what kind of, how far have you gotten in The Wire, speaking of it?
I think I'm 6 episodes in or so. Okay. It's getting good. I mean, it's good.
Yeah, so you're at the point where...
I'm not hooked to the point where it's like, oh my God, I got to watch the next episode before I go to sleep.
No, but you are at the point where I think you should be... You understand what's going on now. You mm-hmm. understand the people.
There's a big cast.
It's a very big cast.
It's killing me being in 4x3, though. It's really killing me.
Yeah.
Not being in 16x9. Old TV shows. It's probably one of the last shows HBO did in 4x3.
Well, Sopranos must have been 4x3 too, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was TV.
Yeah, for 40 years. 50 years.
And that was how movies originally were.
Mm-hmm. It's such a horrible format now. After you watch something in 4x3, it's like, you can't see anything.
Yeah.
You know, because your natural sight is, it's a lot more, it's not 16x9, but it's a lot more like 16x9.
Yeah, it feels, I think, And I don't know whether this is necessarily because we're so used to having rectangular viewports of sorts that we're used to. We have a visual.
You train your periphery?
Yeah, you train yourself to sort of see in sort of a rectangular format.
Well, I mean, but you do see. Like, I mean, if you even tested your periphery, right? I mean, like here and.
Jeff is putting his hands out,
so I can just barely see them. And yeah, I mean, it's not quite. I mean, I think the corners are kind of rounded off, so it's not quite a rectangle. But mm-hmm. that's also why the screen's not that wide, right? It's smaller, so you can see it. But yeah, I mean, you see in a letterbox type.
But like format. I said, I don't know whether that's just because we're so used to seeing other entertainment through letterbox.
I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot more physiology there, right? I mean, it's not like I can see my hand back. If I had more practice seeing this hand. It's back way behind my ear. It's not like if I had more practice seeing this, I could see this. You know, because it is, like, even when I look over there, I can't see my hand because my eyes physically can't see it.
Right.
Right? So I don't think it's really a practice thing. Yeah, I think there's some of it there, but I think majority of it is the humans, the way their eyes are oriented, they see a wider point of view. I mean, because there's not too much danger coming from the skies. Or coming from the ground, right? So you want that landscape view so you can see more mm-hmm. of the ground where all the tigers are. You know, that's why we see this way.
Well, the odd thing is that you kind of don't see this. I mean, you do, but you don't. It's like you see, first of all, it's only really in black and white that you think you're seeing in color
mm-hmm.
because your mind is reinterpreting everything.
Right.
But also there are ways that they can... You know, make it look like something. You know, psychologists have played around with making it so they can make things appear here that aren't there, or make things not appear here that are there. So it's all about that sense that you build up in your mind, the sort of 3D sense that you build up of where you are and what the environment is around you. And that takes so much time to do, and you just train your body at it, and you train your mind at it.
I saw two things this past week about how your mind fills in the gaps trying to make sense of things you see, right? Like, you know, one was about eyewitness testimony.
Yes.
And then the other one was about, not specifically about eyewitness, but something very similar. You know, and I think that one mentioned, you know, the whole gorilla experiment, right? Where, you know, they tell you to watch.
Oh, yes, yes.
There's something happening on TV, I think a person doing something, and they tell you to count how many times, he's dribbling a basketball. And they tell you how many times he dribbles the basketball. And they have this guy in a gorilla suit walk behind the guy dribbling the basketball. And, like, almost nobody who watched the video
sees the gorilla because it's selective attention. You're concentrating on that so much, and all your attention is being forced on that something in the background doesn't light up your neurons. Mm-hmm.
But the other one I was watching was one of those TED Talks where it was a forensic, who's a light guy. It was fascinating. He was talking about, you know, like, you know, he went out and recreated the scene and he knew that, like, the person's far point was only like 18 inches and it was only in black and white, right? It was a very dim night. And there was, you know, it was a shooting, right? And so, like, he actually got the judge to come out and they recreated the drive-by shooting. And the guy was so sure of his facts of what the guy could see. They had the car come right back around and stop in front of the judge. And the judge could stay in there for as long as he wanted to see if he could identify the person's face. And it was like four feet away, you know. But the subject was backlit. You know, there was a light across the street. Mm-hmm. You know, the roof of the car was putting some shading there and he couldn't see anyway. So it was just completely black inside the car. But, I mean, everyone's had this experience. If you, like, went back and replayed something, like, if you just drove by, you would construct a person's face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would see that person's face even though you physically couldn't. And it's just your brain is filling
malleable.
In the gaps.
It's malleable, and it changes. Your experience changes things. And, yeah, it fills in the gaps. But, I mean, the reason why there's that, you know, the story of the fish getting bigger is not because people are really lying. It's because they keep embellishing it as they go back to it. That's what the brain naturally does.
And every time you access a memory, that's when it's...
Every time you access memory, you're changing it. It's almost a quantum effect. What's the... Like, why am I not able to think of this right now? Sort of an uncertainty principle effect with memory, right? Because every time you access it, you change it. Every time.
Oh, just because observing the experiment affects the experiment. That kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, I'm not sure the exact. I'm not sure the exact mechanism. You know, it's almost like, you know, like analog tape, right? When you read it, say you have to read it off the tape and then re-record it so it's there next time. Imagine your tape player, when it reads stuff, erases it, right? And you write it back down. It's going to lose some quality every single time. Well, memory is not the same way. But when you read it for that instance, it's open to be screwed up, right? Mm-hmm. So the fish could get bigger or, you know, something absurd.
The day was brighter, or
something absurd might get inserted.
It wasn't quite the right time that you remembered it, and you know that gets slightly.
But there
changed.
Could be completely there. Like there was one of the researchers they talked about was they did things like they had people like they showed photos. They showed Photoshop photos of you know Obama shaking the Iranian president Ahmadinejad's hand, right? Even though it never happened. And people are like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, so there's this whole suggestion thing where, you know, their brain, they didn't say yeah because they wanted to not sound ignorant. They said yeah because their brain told them that they had seen that photo before.
I think, though, that also, if it would have been Obama shaking hands with Bigfoot, people wouldn't have remembered it. So it was the fact that it was within the realm of possibility and that there was a lot of noise about Obama being, you know, friendly to certain
right.
countries. That's why that helped them. So there were things that happened that were like that, so that reinforced the idea that, oh yeah, I remember when that sort of thing happened.
Right.
But there was another one, I think I've talked about this before, where they asked people about people who never been on a boat ride, do you remember going on the boat ride? And they would say no, and then they would show them pictures photoshopped of them in the boat, and they say, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. Some people would, not everybody, but there were people who they would retroactively, you know, they would figure out, or their mind would come up with some sort of explanation for that. So it's interesting, but yeah, that's why you can't trust eyewitness testimony.
No,
that's why it's important to constantly test things and retest and retest.
Here's a memory thing that for me, my brother-in-law was going through his old papers and stuff, and when he was in high school, he went to North Hills. He went to a careers and communications day at North Allegheny, and on the paper was like Andrew Stocky, you know, sports reporter here in Pittsburgh, and you know, one of the newscasters, and Dennis Bowman, you know, weather guy, and Jeff Bearer from Pinatech about web stuff. So I apparently went back to North Allegheny to talk about web design or interactive something or another. I can't remember that at all.
Well, I remember we used to do little...
The training for the phone companies. Yeah.
We used to do the phone companies would have us come out and we'd tell them how to do a very basic HTML program.
Right. I don't remember going back to my high school, though, and giving a talk to high school kids about web design. No recollection at all. It's like... It's almost disconcerting that this memory is completely gone. It's like, what else is completely gone, you know?
A lot. I mean, we're getting into our 40s. We're reaching a threshold.
I guess, but I mean, this, I don't know. It's just memory, it seems like a memory that shouldn't have disappeared.
Well, why not? You can't have everything.
I guess. It's just like I went back to my high school and was, you know, having some kind of talk about careers in web design. And it's not too many times you do public speaking. You don't think you're, you know, one of these rare public speaking events would have gone missing. It seems like it's one of those distinct enough things that you'd remember it.
If nothing amazing happened, you're likely not going to. Yeah. You know, there's the story of Richard Feynman always used to would go around to people and say, you're never going to guess what happened to me. You're never going to, the most amazing thing happened, you're never going to guess what happened to me. And people would say, what? Absolutely nothing. And his point that he was trying to make to people was that we overvalue strange events and think that they're interesting and important. Like, you know, when you dream that your cousin hurt the way that Rotus Krauss was saying. You dreamed your cousin broke his leg, and you wake up the next day and find out your cousin broke his arm. You think, oh my God, kismet. But no, it's just you forget all those 10,000 dreams you have. And you similarly, okay, so you were at some event that you don't remember. Probably nothing interesting happened. And it was just like a slog to get through. How many days have we had of those? We used to have to go to conventions and things like that. I can't tell you what happened during any of those conventions. I just remember being bored out of my mind.
I guess. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. For me, it's like, huh. I thought I would have always remembered something like that. Because he showed me the paper. I'm like, what the hell is this? Why is my name on this? And I'm trying to think back, and I'm remembering, like, when I was in the TV class, like, Paul Steigerwald came from the Penguins, you know, one of the sportscasters of the Penguins was there. I'm like, that's not the memory, because I was a student then. And, just no recollection at all. It's great. I don't know. You don't think it's remarkable. I think it's crazy that it's completely gone. All right, let's wrap this up. Anything else?
Well, we'll see you in the post show.
All right.